The sea does not reward those who are too anxious, too greedy, or too impatient. To dig for treasures shows not only impatience and greed, but lack of faith. Patience, patience, patience is what the sea teaches. Patience and faith. One should lie empty, open, choiceless as a beach, waiting for a gift from the sea. Hello, hello, dear introverted mom friends. This is episode 8 of Literary Snapshots, but it's the first episode about Gift from the Sea, and we're going to touch on quotes from the first 4 chapters, amazingly. That's half of the book. I hope that you've enjoyed getting started with it and that you've just had a sense maybe of what a special book it is. I thought maybe it would be good to start with a little introduction to the author, Anne Morrow Lindbergh. She was born in 1906 and died in 2001 at the age of 94. I loved when I saw that as a child, her mother would read aloud to all the children, including Anne, for an hour. Isn't that so cool? When I saw that on Wikipedia, I thought, oh my goodness, it's so clear to see how that influenced her life and her writing in later years. She, of course, married famed aviator Charles Lindbergh at the age of 23, and in 1930, so cool, she became the first American woman to earn a first-class glider pilot's license. Over the course of their 45-year marriage, the Lindberghs lived in New Jersey, New York, England, France, Maine, Michigan, Connecticut, Switzerland, and Hawaii. And she went on to write over 10 books, including several collections of her diaries that have been published. And many of her books have won reputable awards. But you could argue that Gift from the Sea is probably her most well-known and widely read. And I hope that if you've already gotten started with it, you can see why that's the case. I have to say that sometimes I feel when I'm preparing one of these literary snapshot episodes for you guys, I have almost like a bit of anxiety because I find it so difficult to narrow down. You know, I see, okay, I'm supposed to talk about these 4 chapters or these 6 chapters of Jane Eyre, and there are like hundreds of potential beautiful quotes and things that I could mention. And the idea of trying to narrow them down, pick the very best ones, and then leave out so much is kind of panic-inducing to me sometimes. But I am really trying to hold loosely to my perfectionistic streak here and just to touch on things that really jumped out at me, trusting that, yes, there is plenty more to talk about, and I would love to always do that in the forum, but I hope that I hope that you can hear my heart to come across with sharing just a little something without trying to cover all of it, which I think, you know, we don't really necessarily need that either. And so in the spirit of living in grace, which is what Anne talks about so often here, let's turn to one of the first quotes that I wanted to discuss and read for you today. These first 2 quotes actually come from chapter 2, which is about the channeled whelk. I'm sure you've seen by now that Anne divides her discussions about the phases of a woman's life through the context of these shells that she either finds when she's on vacation or already has with her. And the channeled whelk is the one that symbolizes simplification to her. Now, I couldn't help when I read this quote to think about the fact that she was writing this in 1955. And here we are so many years later. And I couldn't help but think, what on earth would she think of if she could see us now? Here's what Anne had to say. For life today in America is based on the premise of ever-widening circles of contact and communication. It involves not only family demands, but community demands, national demands, international demands on the good citizen through social and cultural pressures, through newspapers, magazines, radio programs, political drives, charitable appeals, and so on. My mind reels with it. What a circus act we women perform every day of our lives. It puts the trapeze artist to shame. Look at us. We run a tightrope daily, balancing a pile of books on the head. Baby carriage, parasol, kitchen chair, still under control. Steady now. This is not the life of simplicity, but the life of multiplicity that the wise men warn us of. It leads not to unification, but to fragmentation. It does not bring grace. It destroys the soul. And this is not only true of my life, I am forced to conclude. It is the life of millions of women in America. I stress America because today the American woman, more than any other, has the privilege of choosing such a life. I immediately thought of Facebook and social media when she was writing about the ever-widening circles of contact and communication. You know, how much more do we have of that now than she did at her time when she was writing these words, trying to encourage women and herself to simplify? And it really is so true that we add all these pressures to ourselves for people that we barely know. I think of, is it Dunbar's Law, where it states that, you know, you could only have about 150 friends, people that you are connected to before it just is not humanly possible. And I think that's really what she is referring to that leads to so much of our stress. The other thing that just jumped out at me is the word fragmentation. I feel like this represents so often the way that I feel when I get off of social media, having like spent time scrolling for a while. And I don't deny like some of the benefits of social media by any stretch of the imagination, but I just find that, I mean, it just doesn't take me long before scrolling becomes something that leads to this feeling in my brain where it feels fragmented and fragile and not a good feeling when I get off. And I was also struck by how she's saying here that the American woman is choosing this life because we have extra free time compared to areas of the world where people are struggling just to survive. And yet we choose these things that are not really beneficial to us or to our families. And if that was true for Anne in 1955, how much more true is it of us today? And it's all well and good to talk about, yes, we need to simplify. But of course, the answer when you are a busy mom is, of course, yes, but how? And I love that she doesn't just vent about the problem and the issue, but she does try imperfectly to touch on the how. This is another quote from that same chapter. What is the answer? There is no easy answer, no complete answer. I have only clues, shells from the sea. The bare beauty of the channeled whelk tells me that one answer, and perhaps a first step, is in simplification of life, in cutting out some of the distractions. But how? Total retirement is not possible. I cannot shed my responsibilities. I cannot permanently inhabit a desert island. I cannot be a nun in the midst of family life. I would not want to be. The solution for me, surely, is neither in total renunciation of the world nor in total acceptance of it. I must find a balance somewhere or an alternating rhythm between these two extremes, a swinging of the pendulum between solitude and communion, between retreat and return. I love that here she's just acknowledging that there is this paradox. You know, we can't run away from our responsibilities. We can't just have quiet just because we need quiet. And she's acknowledging that by referring to this pendulum, which swings back and forth. I felt like this points to the seasons of motherhood, some which are just full on, nonstop, it seems, and others where we can find a bit more balance in certain ways. And just acknowledging that that is true and that just swings to one extreme and then back to the other. I wrote in the margin at this point about that swinging pendulum, Sabbath. because I felt like the practice and idea of Sabbath, of trying to take one day a week away from screens, away from some of our duties, is a way to try to aim for this balance, to get the solitude and communion, and then to have retreat and then return. And that's just one thing that came to me. I've been learning a lot about Sabbath this year, trying to practice it more and more, and it really has been a blessing in my life. So that's what it brought to my mind here. Next, I wanted to share a few of Anne's thoughts from chapter 3 about the moon shell, which she feels represents solitude. And that's really something that appeals to us and something we desperately need as introverted moms. Here, leading up to this quote, she's again talking about just the fast-paced hecticness of our lives. And really, she's saying that we must counter that in the opposite spirit. She writes, "On the contrary, she," referring to us or a woman, "must consciously encourage those pursuits which oppose the centrifugal forces of today. Quiet time alone, contemplation, prayer, music, a centering line of thought or reading, of study or work. It can be physical or intellectual or artistic, any creative life proceeding from oneself. It need not be an enormous project or a great work, but it should be something of one's own. Arranging a bowl of flowers in the morning can give a sense of quiet in a crowded day, like writing a poem or saying a prayer. What matters is that one be, for a time, inwardly attentive." Okay, I have to just tell you what I wrote in the margin at this point, which is I actually wrote the words "kicking my butt" because I felt that right before this quote, she talks about how our lives are again so fragmented, but she uses this German word, which I'm not going to even attempt to pronounce, that means torn to pieceshood. And I just found that so reflective of the way that I feel, especially during certain seasons of motherhood where you feel like you are going a million different directions, being pulled on in so many different ways. And what she's saying here really is that we have to counter that fragmentation with the opposite spirit, which is our natural introverted bent. And that's what we need to be able to stabilize both forces. I thought it was such a beautiful like stamp of approval for introversion too. Really what she's saying, and this is also what I wrote in the margin, introverts are prime for this, to lead the way in this like cultural shift that we all need, but we are naturally wired to do it if we believe that it's valid and important, which is something she speaks to as well. And if we, you know, act on that belief, even in the midst of having a million things on our plates to do. The last quote I wanted to share and discuss with you is from chapter 4, which is about the double sunrise shell. And this is the one she uses to symbolize marriage, particularly the early phase of marriage, the honeymoon period, and maybe the period before children, where both halves of the person, you know, are facing each other, and there is newness and love and aliveness, and how we know that no relationship can stay the same forever, but somehow we try to cling to this double sunrise phase. She writes, "One learns to accept the fact that no permanent return is possible to an old form of relationship, and, more deeply still, that there is no holding of a relationship to a single form. This is not tragedy, but part of the ever-recurrent miracle of life and growth. All living relationships are in process of change, of expansion, and must perpetually be building themselves new forms. But there is no single fixed form to express such a changing relationship. There are perhaps different forms for each successive stage, different shells I might put in a row on my desk, to suggest the different stages of marriage, or indeed of any relationship." And that quote really leads to the ending question I wanted to leave you with today. If you remember, the literary life coaching question that I suggested for this title was, how can I strengthen my relationship with someone, the someone being whoever, you know, God put on your heart. And so with that person or that relationship in mind, I wanted to just suggest this question in light of Anne's quote. Is it causing you any pain to attempt to hold on to the past of what that relationship once was? And would you find freedom if you accepted this new form of it? If you let go of the past and began to dream of the future of what that relationship could be now instead? I offer all of this up to you, friends, with much love and a prayer that some part of it has stirred something within you that will lead to your own incredible insights and thoughts. And then it's also just giving you some good contemplative time, like Anne is suggesting that we need to have every day. I look forward to talking to you soon and discussing this book more in the forum. Take care, friends.